Welcome to Managing Myeloma. My name is Sergio Giralt, and I am a professor of medicine at Weill Cornell Medical College. I'm the Melvin Berlin Family Chair in Myeloma Research and Chief of the Adult BMT Service at Memorial Hospital in New York City. Today, we are going to discuss updated diagnostic criteria multiple myeloma, the impact on your clinical practice. Our objectives are to summarize the recent updates to diagnostic criteria for multiple myeloma, compare and contrast updated diagnostic criteria for myeloma with previously utilized standards of diagnosis, and identify how new diagnostic criteria will impact treatment of patients with active myeloma. So what is myeloma? Myeloma is an abnormal proliferation and accumulation of monoclonal plasma cells. Myeloma-derived plasma cells are derived by precursor B cells that become malignant. Normal bone marrow should contain up to 5% plasma cells that are equally distributed between kappa light chain and lambda light chain producers. Myeloma is an abnormal proliferation of a clonal plasma cell. That means a cell that produces one heavy chain and or one light chain. So they'll be lambda restricted or kappa restricted. On the microscope, we can generally imagine that a patient has a malignant plasma cell disorder, because instead of having isolated plasma cells will aggregate in clusters, and that will translate into a greater than 5% plasma cell infiltration in the bone marrow. Remember, there's no single laboratory test that can provide the differential diagnosis of multiple myeloma. Myeloma is a clinical diagnosis that is made with a pathologic correlate of a monoclonal proliferation of plasma cells. Let's talk a little bit about serum protein electrophoresis. Remember that proteins are separated in a gel according to their weight and the electric charge. So when we put serum into a gel and that is put with electric charges, the proteins will separate into different parts. The first peak that we will see will be albumin, then alpha 1, then alpha 2, then beta, in a broad band that we call the gamma band, where all the antibodies produced by normal plasma cells are included. The broad band is due to the fact that you have thousands of plasma cells producing antibodies that all weigh differently and have a different electric charges and therefore migrate on the gel on different speeds. When you have a monoclonal gammopathy, you have essentially a group of plasma cells that are producing a same antibody that weighs the same and has the same electric charge. What will that translate into in a serum protein electrophoresis? It will translate into a paraprotein peak that we recognize as the monoclonal gammopathy. This is a sharp band in the gamma region that suggests the presence of a homogeneous immune globulin, and thus either the overproduction of an antibody by a plasma cell or the production of the same antibody by a clone of malignant plasma cells. It is important to remember that myeloma is not the only tumor that produces immune globulin. There are many lymphoproliferative disorders, such as CLL, Waldenstrom's macroglobulinemia, and some of the lymphomas that can also have paraproteins present. However, the most common one is multiple myeloma. So, what is an abnormal monoclonal protein? As we've stated previously, the plasma cells are clonal. They all produce the same immune globulin with the same heavy chain and the same light chain. Most common myeloma protein is an IgG, which is either kappa or lambda. The second most common is an IgA. The third most common is actually that the myeloma plasma cells do not produce a heavy chain, and it's called light chain only disease. There are many terms for the myeloma protein. We call it either the M spike, or we in the urine, we call it the urine Bench-Jones protein, or the urine myeloma peak. Here is an electrophoretic pattern comparing the normal, and notice that you have a broad gamma peak versus the abnormal, where you have this sharp peak in the gamma region. to be able to identify what type of immune globulin, we use immune fixation. And as you can see in this slide, immune fixation will identify the heavy chain. In this example, it is IgG. Look at the dark band at the IgG level. And a light chain, which is kappa. Look at the dark band at the kappa row. So this patient has a paraprotein peak that is IgG kappa. So myeloma is a plasma cell dyscrasia that is part of a disease continuum. Work done by Dr. Ola Langren in the National Cancer Institute demonstrated that all patients with myeloma had a preceding condition called monoclonal gammopathy of uncertain significance. This is a condition that's defined by less than 10% bone marrow plasma cells, no evidence of any organ damage, and generally this condition rarely, if ever, transforms to myeloma. The rate of transformation to myeloma is less than 1% a year for all patients with monoclonal gammopathy with uncertain significance. We recognize that there are patients with high-risk MGUS that probably should be followed more carefully because these are patients where the risk of progression to myeloma is actually higher. A second condition that has been identified and described is smoldering myeloma or asymptomatic myeloma. These are patients who, although have greater than 10% plasma cells, have no evidence of end organ damage. They have none of what so-called CRAB criteria. No calcium abnormalities, no renal function abnormalities, no anemia, and no bone disease. These patients will eventually progress to multiple myeloma at different rates. We recognize that not all smoldering myelomas will progress to myeloma, to symptomatic myeloma at the same rate. Patients with symptomatic myeloma now have end organ damage as defined by calcium abnormalities, renal abnormalities, anemia, or bone disease. MGUS is a relatively common condition, which approximately 7 to 10% of the patients in different ethnic groups having in any given period of time, with the increased incidence happening in older patients above the age of 70. This is a condition that is commonly seen by the internist, and it is important for us as a community to educate our primary care physicians of which patients with a monoclonal peak should be considered for further evaluation and testing. The risk of progression is similar for African Americans as for Caucasians. As stated before, as work by Dr. Landgren, this is truly a precancerous condition, but it is important to once note that most patients with MGUS will not develop myeloma. Actually, most patients with myeloma, we will not be able to identify an episode of MGUS previously, although many of them will state that they had laboratories done 2 to 3 years before the diagnosis was made with mildly elevated total protein. In a patient with MGUS, what are the predictive factors for progression? Well, obviously, the size of the peak is probably one of the most important predictors. The higher the peak, the relative risk of progression to myeloma is higher. The suppression of non-involved immune globulin, which can be seen in up to 30% of patients with MGUS, is also a predictor of progressing to myeloma. And the higher the percentage of bone marrow plasma cells, the closer it is to 10, the more likely it is that this patient with MGUS will be progressing to myeloma and therefore should be followed more carefully either by the primary care physician or referred to a hematologist for close follow-up. As stated previously, the most common abnormal paraprotein peak is an IgG. The second most common is an IgA. And only 1% of patients with free light chain assays actually are now true non-secretory disease in which a paraprotein peak or a free light chain will not be detectable on either serum or urine analysis. It's important to recognize that currently in North America, 30% of patients with myeloma will present without any symptoms whatsoever. This does not mean that they have asymptomatic disease. 70% of patients will be anemic, 65% will have bone pains, 15% will present with hypercalcemia, and 20% will present with serum creatinine of greater than 2. Note, these are the CRAB criteria. In general, what leads a patient to the doctor is increasing fatigue, pains, occurrence of infection, or an altered mental status because of hypercalcemia. It is important to educate primary care physicians that patients with progressive fatigue and anemia in which a source of bleeding is not found should be referred to a hematologist. Likewise, patients with recurrent infection should have immune globulins checked, and a decrease in immune globulins or an elevated IgG or IgA level should be considered for further workup of suspicious myeloma. The NCCN now recommends a basic diagnostic workup that will allow to establish extent of disease, extent of organ damage, and then will allow us to establish prognosis and help us decide what is the specific therapy needed for induction, consolidation, and maintenance for the individual myeloma patient. As we discussed previously, multiple myeloma is a clonal proliferation of plasma cells. One can imagine that as these plasma cells proliferate in the bone marrow, they will infiltrate the bone marrow and affect the way the bone marrow works and cause anemia. One can also imagine that they will destroy the bone where they're located, causing lytic lesions, pathologic fractures, and hypercalcemia. What's interesting is that myeloma not only causes problems in the place where these tumors are growing, but the paraprotein P can actually affect renal function, cause hyperviscosity, and on occasion have immune properties by itself. The myeloma plasma cell grows at the expense of normal plasma cells, and although the abnormal globulin is at very high levels, the uninvolved immune globulins are reduced, and therefore there is a risk of infection occurring. Until recently, the International Myeloma Working Group has separated the plasma cell disorders or the spectrum of these plasma cell disorders in three. Patients would have monoclonal gammopathy of uncertain significance if they had less than 10% plasma cells. Patient with 10% plasma cells and a paraprotein peak, but without any of the CRAB criteria, meaning a calcium of greater than 11.5 milligrams per deciliter, renal insufficiency, a creatinine of greater than 2, a hemoglobin less than 10, or bone disease, would be classified as having symptomatic myeloma and would require treatment. This is a summary of, again, the three different states of a clonal plasma cell disorder, from MGUS to symptomatic myeloma. One of the things that have happened is that for patients with smoldering myeloma, since it was the tradition not to treat, many of these patients, their first manifestation of symptomatic disease was either renal failure, severe anemia, a severe infection, or a fracture. It has been well recognized that there are some patients with smoldering myeloma that had an extremely high risk of progression to symptomatic disease. The new criteria recognizes these patients, and now these patients are considered for early treatment despite the fact that they have not developed quote-unquote CRAB criteria. Let's discuss the rationale for these. Well, first, let's remind that the risk of progression for a patient with smoldering myeloma is somewhere 70% at 20 years. But there is a group of patients, almost 50% of them, that will have progression to symptomatic disease within the first 2 years of diagnosis. Can we identify these patients? Well, there is a risk stratification that we can do. So this has been work that has been done by the Mayo Clinic. We recognize that there are certain groups of patients in which progression at 2 years is almost 40%, while other patients actually do not progress in 20 years. The group at Mayo Clinic has looked at risk stratification of patients with smoldering myeloma. And they've showed that there is a group of patients who have a very high risk of progressing to myeloma at the two-year mark. While there's another group of patients whose risk of progressing to myeloma is extremely low, with less than 50% of them progressing within 20 years. They also showed that patients with very high paraprotein peaks of greater than 3, or patients with very elevated plasma cell infiltration of greater than 10, were the ones that actually fell into this high-risk smoldering myeloma. They also showed that free light chain assay was useful in risk assessment in smoldering myeloma. Patients with very high or very low free light chain ratios were at a higher risk of developing progression to symptomatic disease than those with lower levels of free light chain ratio abnormalities. Finally, patients with bone marrow infiltration of greater than 60% had an extremely high risk of progressing to multiple myeloma within the first 2 years. As most of us are aware, skeletal surveys continue to be the standard of care for imaging patients with multiple myeloma. Notwithstanding, as part of the workup, many of us have done whole body CTs or whole body MRIs or PET CTs, recognizing that this is a much more sensitive test than bone surveys. So what do we do with a patient who actually has a normal bone survey but an abnormal enhanced radiologic imaging technique, an abnormal CT or an abnormal MRI? We actually have shown, and this slide shows, that patients with abnormal CTs or abnormal MRIs are also at significantly higher risk of progressing to multiple myeloma because these tests are more sensitive and specific than the traditional bone survey. So there is significant advantage for the new imaging. The most important one is that you can actually detect the disease before a lytic lesion is formed. So the International Myeloma Working Group spent significant amount of time discussing, should the criteria for treatment of myeloma be changed? Currently, the criteria require that patients have at least one of the CRAB criteria. The problem with the CRAB criteria is there's no easy way to predict hypercalcemia. Some data suggests that some patients can progress to renal failure fairly quickly, and early intervention may not reduce or recover renal function. Anemia is sometimes confusing because it's multifactorial, and as we showed, by the moment patients have developed lytic lesions, there has been extensive damage already done and extensive tumor burden. Therefore, we're losing the opportunity of preventing these things from happening by not treating patients earlier in the course of the disease. So, the International Myeloma Working Group sat down and decided, were there patients who did not fit the old definition, and because the risk of progression were considered so high that they actually should be considered for treatment before developing CRAB criteria? So, as discussed previously, the free light chain ratio of greater than 100 or less than 0.01 showed extremely high risk of progression. Plasma cells of greater than 60%, again, extremely high risk of progression. And because of this, it was decided that it was time to update the criteria for treatment and definition of smoldering myeloma. The International Working Group met and decided that they would identify these three criteria they call as SLIM, and this is an acronym for 60% plasma cells, serum-free light chain involvement with an uninvolved or involved involved over uninvolved ratio of greater than 100 and greater than one focal lesion detected by MRI. So the criteria have now changed, and it is actually recommended that for patients who have a plasma cell proliferative disorder is identified by greater than 10% plasma cells with one or more myeloma defining events as either one CRAB criteria or one SLIM feature should be considered for therapy. And these patients should be treated as traditional symptomatic myeloma with induction therapy, consolidation, and maintenance if appropriate. So what's happening? First, we need to have the appropriate amount of testing to be able to stage a patient. So we should be performing all the recommended baseline workups, which include a history and physical, comprehensive metabolic profile, a complete blood count, SPEP, UPEP, and free light chain assays, bone marrow with cytogenetic and FISH testing, and X-ray analysis beyond the phone survey. This would include either bone marrow or whole body CT, depending on what's available in the community or where the place the physician is practicing. Cytogenetic analysis and FISH analysis should be done in CD138 fraction whenever possible. Dr. Dispensieri put this all together in a very good review that came out in Blood in 2013. And essentially, what's summarized in this slide is that patients now who have greater than 60%, patients who have no CRAB criteria, but have greater than 10% plasma cells and a paraprotein peak of greater than 3, should be considered for treatment if A, they have 60% plasma cells or more, B, if they have abnormal free light chain ratios of greater than 100, or C, if they have more than one focal lesion on MRI. Again, these patients should be considered as active myeloma, and they should be treated as if they had symptomatic myeloma based on CRAB criteria. Once again, I underscore these patients should not be treated differently. They should be treated the same as if they had CRAB criteria. So this is put in a schematic view. What's happening now? So let's remind ourselves. Plasma cells disorders go from a continuum from monoclonal gammopathy of uncertain significance to smoldering myeloma to symptomatic myeloma. Within the smoldering myeloma, we recognize two groups, or three groups really, an ultra-high-risk smoldering myeloma, a high-risk smoldering myeloma, and a low-risk smoldering myeloma. What we used to call ultra-high-risk smoldering are patients who are expected to progress to symptomatic disease within the first 2 years. These patients have a plasma cell percentage of over 60%, an abnormal free light chain, or an abnormal MRI. No longer should these patients be considered smoldering. They should be considered as an active myeloma and therefore should be treated. We do recognize that there is a group of patients who do not have ultra high risk but high risk myeloma based on a variety of criteria. These need to be better defined, and these patients should be strongly considered and encouraged to participate in clinical trials, as there is a suggestion that early treatment may make a difference in the natural course of their disease. So how are we approaching patients at this time? Well, remind yourselves that patients lacking CRAB criteria but have any of the SLIM characteristics should be treated as active myeloma. Patients with smoldering myeloma can be risk stratified. Patients with high-risk smoldering should be considered for clinical trials. I remind patients and physicians in the community that there is a registry that we should all think of participating if patients are willing to do so. This registry provides us a real-world picture of what's happening to the myeloma patients in the community. For example, this registry allowed us to show something which we need to change. As I've stated, the National Comprehensive Cancer Network has said that there's a minimal workup that all patients with newly diagnosed myeloma should have. They should have a medical history and physical, a bone marrow biopsy. They should have a complete blood count, a complete metabolic profile, a bone marrow aspiration biopsy, an albumin level, a beta 2 microglobulin level, a skeletal survey, preferably also with enhanced radiologic assessment, either whole body CT and PET CT. They should have protein and serum electrophoresis done. They should have protein serum electrophoresis, a urine electrophoresis, immune fixation studies, quantitative immune globulins, cytogenetics, free light chain, and LDH. And in the bone marrow, CD138 fraction should be sent for FISH analysis. Unfortunately, when we look throughout the community, even in academic centers, most of the academic centers and the community practices are only doing all the recommended workup in 60 to 70% of the patients, which means that 30 to 40% of the patients are not getting the minimal workup that we think is necessary for an appropriate risk stratification and treatment planning for patients with myeloma today. We're hoping that this registry will be useful for us to show that we are increasing the bar and the quality of care that's provided to myeloma patients, not only in the academic centers, in the myeloma centers of excellence, but also, more importantly, in the community close to where the patients live. So, once again, we recognize that the changing criteria are always difficult to adopt. The reason why the International Myeloma Working Group decided to do this is because we think it's beneficial for the patients to be able to be treated before they develop signs and symptoms of end organ damage. We will continue to work to risk stratify patients with both monoclonal gammopathy of uncertain significance and smoldering multiple myeloma. Our eventual goal is to allow patients to have the longest life with the best quality of life with the minimum burden of therapy. And we recognize that some of these terminologies are confusing. We recommend all patients and physicians who are dealing with multiple myeloma to stay attuned and to keep using these educational forums such as Managing Myeloma, as well as the patient advocacy websites. They're essential for education and to keeping us all up to date in what's happening with the myeloma field. So let me once remind you that there is no single laboratory test that can allow us to differentiate multiple myeloma from smoldering myeloma from MGUS. That when patients is symptomatic, symptoms should be attributable to multiple myeloma and not other cause. That patients diagnosed with MGUS or smoldering myeloma are usually done by chance and that they require further workup. Myeloma defining events have been expanded beyond CRAB to include biomarkers of malignancy or SLIM criteria. These SLIM criteria are now 60% clonoplasma cells or more, a free light chain ratio of involved versus uninvolved to greater than 100, greater than one focal lesion by MRI. We also recommend that all of us that are treating myeloma patients to follow recommended NCCN IMWG baseline tests at the time of diagnosis. And I encourage patients and physicians to participate in the Myeloma Connect. Thank you for viewing this activity. For additional resources, please view the other educational activities on managingmyeloma.com.